Welcome to Biggest Geekass. We're your hosts. I'm Randy.
And I'm Joe.
This is episode 159 of our show, and the date is Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. What's up, brother?
Not much. Temperature. It's odd.
Yeah.
For Michigan, the temperature is pretty high. I mean, it got in the 80s today, again.
Yeah, it sure did. So, I mean, I think we got a couple more days like that, and that'll be it, but.
Well, that's what they say, but it's Michigan, so who knows?
Yeah, so looks like we got a good crowd of people. I didn't get much of anything to do. Martinson had to just remind me of something that I don't want to do. There's a new 25th anniversary Kickstarter for Deadlands Night Train. I have to look at it. I love John Goff's Night Train. They're going to have a sequel adventure. Yeah, I'm not going in for the 500. I'm probably not. I don't want to go in at all. I've been kind of
500.
Yeah, I haven't seen
for
it.
What? Yet. What do you get for $500?
I don't know. Maybe like a
is that like the full meal deal for everything?
Yeah, probably your name in the book and some kind of gobbledygook.
Someone will send you their farts in a jar.
Yeah, I have
authentic artist farts in a jar.
I have the original dime store novel version of Night Train by John Goff. It's a really cool Deadlands adventure, but we'll see. But it's good to see the folks in here now. We got a big pile of them. Looks like starting L, always the number one in Quick and Dirty. Halcyon is in. Martinson, Green Apple. Who else? Iron Man, Patrick Ryan, David. I don't have a bone to pick. I said his episode today pissed me off, not because of him, but something he talked about. I was just like, this is unbelievable. I'm about to spill the beans on that. And Larry Elliott, Darth Theic, who else is in the house here? I think that's most. I think I got everybody. Somebody named Chicago, Patrick Demo, and Iron Man. Did I miss them? Welcome, everybody. It's good to see
you. Halcyon, did you say Halcyon? He's hanging.
Yeah, L says 500 bucks better get you a fridge full of beer. I agree. I am not going that big. I may go small. I'm not sure yet, but it's so tempting. I really need to resist.
The 500 thing, people who get that are called whales. They're the whales. It's big spenders. It's a term.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know really where it came from, except big, and whales are big.
I could be called a whale because I'm big, but I'm not that big of a spender. Well, I'll drop some money sometimes.
When they have that 500 deal, it's usually a lot of the Kickstarters have like 10 of them or 5 of them.
Yeah.
At most.
Yeah.
But they really don't even expect that many people to get it. They expect one or two.
Yeah, David Gwill just showed up, and so is Flady1. Welcome, guys. Yeah, we're talking 500 bucks for the new Deadlands Kickstarter Night Train. I don't know what all involves. You're probably getting everything they've made for Deadlands. So you're probably if I know the Savage World folks, they're giving you just a pile of crap. So you're going to get just tons of stuff. Iron Caster, what's shaking bacon?
They probably throw in a few figures too.
Oh, you'll get pawns galore. The 500 is probably the last two Kickstarters and Blood Drive and all the
decks of cards of some
kind. Yeah, you'll get a pop. It'll probably be no less than what you would pay for retail, and you would get a whole pile of stuff. I would think it'd be better, but I've noticed the Pinnacle doesn't give you that much of a deal.
It's not gonna be better than retail.
No,
because it's early adopter. We really love you. It's almost part of it is worth it, and then the other part is, hey, we want you to do well, so we're going to give you $500.
I haven't seen it yet. I just got the email. Martinson confirms pretty much everything that Deadlands has made, all the box set. So yeah, you're going to be getting.
So this kind of goes with our main topic.
It does.
But do you want to do the rage-inducing thing first?
Yeah, Ryan David did this. Let me present arms here. And Ryan David didn't make me mad. This made
technically
me mad.
He did.
Well, technically. Everybody look at this. If you've not seen this, first of all, listen to Ryan David. They do a good job. I don't know the skinny on this crap. Horse Girl is a Zine Month RPG. It's about listen. I know. Yeah. It's really a what do they call it, Ryan? It was a journaling RPG solo about utter submission to love and surgical transformation into a horse Do you love me, yay or nay?
That tells me this has got to be a troll.
No, this is legit. It is made by, it's being made by Leyline Press. Yes, sir.
It reminds me of those folks who did professional papers a few years ago that were phony. Yeah, someone's fetish. Yeah.
That's what Ironcaster says. Right on, dude.
But that last line there, yay or nay?
Yeah.
Makes me think it's a troll.
Right.
Did you remember hearing about, the group had a name. There were three PhD guys, and they essentially, well, one of the papers they did was on white supremacy and race and rape culture in dog parks. So right, so dog, you know, male dogs that go around humping everybody is a reflection of you know,
get out of here.
Right. And it was a phony paper, but it got published.
Oh yeah, I've heard of it.
So they had like three papers published. They got into a little heat from people. It is kind of underhanded, but it showed a failing in the whole publishing, the whole research paper publishing thing.
Yeah. I think I've heard of that, Joe. I think I heard that. Insane. Ryan David says, totally legit. We had a whole new segment on it with podcast that dropped today. Now here's where, and so obviously the whole idea of this is utterly ridiculous and these people are nutbags, and it gives credence to Ryan's, you know, his idea that we really should gatekeep harder and probably do our best to hunt people down and say, get out of the hobby. This is beyond the stupidity of this. Here's my thing. And Ryan, I need to get on the speakeasy. I'm out of town for a funeral on Saturday. Next Saturday, if you would have me, I would love to be on. I wish Bert would be there, because I'll be honest with you, Bert needed a harsher reaction. Is that dude always that chill? I know he loves to take the opposite side, but I'm sorry. This horse thing, this is ludicrous.
Oh, now, sure.
I was literally angry. I'm like, who are these freaks? They are not just, they're not, these aren't just regular people. This is insane. I have zero utility for that. And I wanted to grab Bert and go, you need to be madder about this. he's more even keel than you. Bert's like, well, you know, so you have this and that. And Ryan was like, I'm going to make an RPG. What'd you call it, Ryan? Goth, hot goth sluts. And he was going to borrow their mechanics and make it the RPG.
And yeah, folks are very accommodating to this whole demented side of demented niche of our culture, or not our culture, niche of our niche hobby. And, you know, when we were growing up in the 80s, nerds were made fun of.
Right.
And this is why.
Right.
This isn't representative of most of us. Most of us are just regular folks who are a little obsessive about gaming or whatever the thing is. And it's just stupid.
Yeah. Ryan said,
that's the RPG he wants to make.
Hot ass
they have that. They have that.
Sluts.
Yeah, they have probably. That. Isn't that Thirsty Sword Lesbians?
Oh, well, that's, yeah, I don't know. Who knows? That's pile that in trash.
Yeah.
And nobody plays that crap. Nope.
Horse Wars. Arn Man.
Right on, Arn Man. Horse Wars. Yeah. And this is bugs me too. Patrick Demo goes, this whole subgenre is merely the result of those with mental issues discovering an outlet to play out their fantasies. What's the deal with the mental issue? There's a whole generation of people that are just so, oh, that's my trauma. This is my trauma. Let me tell you about my trauma. How about you keep it to yourself?
Or, you know, I have an issue and this is what it is, but I'm trying to get help. So if you see me acting weird, this is what it is. So if it's informational, is one thing. If it's affirm this as, you know, I've got this badge on my chest and affirm it as a positive thing, and all this stuff.
Right.
Both, it's like the furries.
Yeah. Oh. whatever, man. Mark Markham and David Gwill basically had the same analogy. Mark said, those Thirsty Sword lesbians aren't drawn hot, though. Yes, I've seen the cover of the book. It's stupid.
Right. It's very bad art.
Or equestrian. And David Gwill backs it up with, none of the women or things pretending to be women and Thirsty Swords lesbians look remotely anywhere retractive. Facts.
Yeah. According to them, though.
What?
According to them, they're hot, I'm sure.
Look, dude, come on. This is ridiculous. But anyway, you know what the good news is? We don't have to play those games. We ain't got to look at those games. And unfortunately, we have to hear about them.
Yes, but even this kind of segues into our main topic's title.
Yeah.
In a way. So in our main topic's title, our main top or the episode title is When is Enough Enough in D&D? We can just kind of fiddle faddle with all this stuff and say, enough is enough, you demented freaks.
Absolutely.
Keep that crap to yourself. Nobody else wants to know about that. Nobody normal. And, you know, those people are kind of permissive or accepting or go along to get along, who'll just say, oh, whatever, I'll do my thing, you do your thing. But no, we just got to say this is demented.
There's a line that you can cross that you'll reach that, simply put, no one, you know, I just can't, yeah. I don't know. I just maybe I was for about 10 seconds. I was fully on board with Ryan. Maybe for an hour. I was like, yeah, I'm going to hunt these people down. I'm going to gatekeep them out of the hobby myself. Give me your D&D books. You are not allowed to play D&D. Yeah. You are not the gamer that I am.
Toothpaste is out of the tube. I don't know how we get them to get out of the hobby, except just laugh at them like,
I know. That's what David Gwill said. And you're right. But I was just like, this is insane. These people are utterly deranged. But we've known that for a while.
I wonder if the way we feel about this horse crap, ha ha ha, pun intended, is the way folks felt about D&D per se back in the day.
There was a portion, I mean, the satanic panic, absolutely. There was a portion of people that thought it was wickedness and degeneracy beyond belief. And you can get mad at them if you want, but I could see coming from that era, if you look at the cover of a D&D book, some of them were pretty risque and there were demons on them. I'm not okaying it. I'm just saying, you know, judging a book by its cover, sometimes you can, but I'm not fully supporting them. I'm just saying that's just the way that it was, And I think, yeah, I'm sure they did. I have no doubt.
Hey, Legion, you missed it.
You did.
You missed it.
Well, I'm sure he's going to Kickstarter, get a piece of that Horse Girl RPG.
Legion, sure. That's going to be on his to buy list. It's not, I'm sure it's not an old school game. It's not OSR.
They call it a journaling RPG. Right. You should.
In other words, it's not an RPG.
Listen to Nerd Cognito's show that dropped today. Ryan does a really good job. Ryan says, don't judge a horse by the bridle, Randy. I know. I'm so bad. But I'm flabbergasted. I don't even know what to say.
You know, there's a phrase that kept going around when we were growing up. Yep. We don't judge. Right?
Right.
And there's kind of a feel-good vibe to that. You know, you don't want to be hard on people and stuff.
Yep.
But if you can't even enunciate your preferences without being called a bigot, I mean, it's bad now. It's really bad.
Dude. Ryan, David, you made me remember this. So apparently, he went to the deep side because he must have gone to the website to get more details on this. You get a red marker with the game. You're supposed to have one. And how did they say it, Ryan? You're supposed to use it to mark your body, your naked body, during the game. And Ryan said, it's going to go directly to genitalia. You're going to draw a wiener on yourself.
Oh, sure. Many, so many, many wieners.
Unbelievable. Oh. What is David saying? Featuring demons to slay isn't the same as fake RPG where you draw cards and see if you're eventually twisted and mutilated into a horse-like abomination. I'm not saying that. Joe's question, though, was, do you think people looked at us that way? And my claim was there were probably some that did, wherein even the appearance of those books probably threw them for a loop, not unlike this horse thing. Now, from a level viewing point, not their skewed one, I agree with you. Clearly, there's no way you can justify D&D as being as bad as
And can you put that link as a comment.
Maybe.
So Legion will know what we're talking about. Essentially, Legion, it's an RP, well, a journaling RPG, if there is such a thing, about essentially trans species. To it's called Horse Girl.
Yeah, I just put it
and, in the chat. And then the fellow that's doing this isn't even a girl.
Yeah, draw it on your naked body. It's a guy. Yeah, this is beyond
stupid. It's a guy pretending to be a girl who wants to also transition to being a horse.
I thought I had sent it, but I don't see it showing up.
Oh, there's something like this already. It's not an RPG, but it's the same kind of deal as that dude who's pretending to be a girl who also is a wolf.
I've seen some of those weirdo things. I just put the link. It doesn't seem to be showing up, though. I put it in the... I posted it, I thought. I'll do this.
Where did you post it at?
I thought I posted it on YouTube.
You can't post links on YouTube. You have to do it here in our chat thing in StreamYard.
Okay, thank you. I will do that. There we go. Sorry, guys. Check that out if you want to.
It's Dicebreaker Games. Always quality, top quality articles.
Well, but Ryan David could, if you go to Leyline Press, I think you'll get more of the information. Honestly, yeah, that's a good point. I don't understand. I'm not dogging. Dice Tales says nothing wrong with solo games. You escape things like horse games and dopey players and bad HMs.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. Solo games are cool. There's actually a solo Savage Deadlands game that I want, a Savage Worlds Deadlands game that I still want to play in from one of the Kickstarters a while back. I've yet to do it. I've never played a solo game, but there's an allure to it. I'm not pooping on it. Green Apple and Dice Tales, I'm not pooping on solo games.
Solo games are not any much different from playing video games by yourself.
Or choose your own adventure.
Choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
It's just a little more form. It's a tabletop version.
Yeah. You get to make your own character. You get to roll your own dice. I get the draw. Yeah, exactly. Leyline Press. They're deranged, Legion. So shall we try to move to the topic or not?
Yeah. So enough of this. I've had enough of this. Yeah. So what the topic enough is really about. Mm-hmm. There's two parts. The first part is about challenge. Now we've talked about challenge and challenge rating and stuff like that before, right. But we're just taking a different tack on it, right?
Yeah, because for me, here's the problem. And I know this may not be popular, but I'm not trying to say you can't do these things. But if you have a game, you guys play my way and shut up. This is how you play D&D. So if you play games and you actually want to spend time playing the game. And I think the DMs have to consider challenges. And I know we have people on here that will say, I'm just going to make tables and I'm going to roll on that. And whatever it is what it is. You can do that, but you have to design the tables. And so when you design the tables, are you going to put a table on there where if you got a party of third level characters, the weakest encounter they could have is four hill giants? No, you're probably not.
No.
Now, if you have a region in your country and your campaign that's known for being, you know, hill giant, Haven, and the adventurers, third level adventurers, stupidly go dirt to dirt. I'm heading over there. I'm going to kick some hill giants' butt. Yeah, lay it on them. But I think there's some aspect that you have to think about challenge.
Sure.
Without using challenge rating, I've often wondered how do you set this up? How hard do you think about it? And is it all just gut instinct? So again, I'm asking this question also because I hope. Like everybody else, to one day have a RPG Mudsword. Mm-hmm. And I want to know if I can give, it's not for me, because I know exactly how I'm going to set up challenges. I'm basically going to make it impossible. So whatever the players want to do, it's going to be way too hard for them, and they're just going to die. That's how I like to play. So, but other people, no, what I mean, no, what no, I mean,
it's not impossible, but it's almost every encounter puts you on the edge of your seat. You have to really think hard to get lucky rolls. Hopefully you don't fail initiative. Hopefully you have a cleric.
You guys only rolled 15 to 18. Nobody rolled a 19 or 20. That's some bad rolling. I don't know. No, really, I don't do that on purpose, but I do think that I can handle. never run adventures. I give appropriate challenges. I do expect the players to be intelligent when they run in against a lot of my encounters, but I don't make it where it's impossible. I have a few cupcakes I could probably use to make it a little more, a few easier ones so the players can feel buff sometimes. So it's not for me per se, but I'm wondering, how do you set the game up? If someone sits down with AD&D, and I can't remember, so maybe you guys that are playing it, was there direct?
There are random tables already that you can use.
I get you. But do they tell you how to generate your own? I think they did.
You know, I don't know if they tell you specifically how to, but you can start with the table they give you. And then if there are things in that table you're like, I don't like that, and you can always switch that stuff out. And after you've used the tables for a while, you probably can get a general idea for what you want to have. So you can have some encounters or situations that are above the player's pay grade, and it's up to the DM to either do or do not as far as clues that it's a bad situation you're getting ready to get yourself into, give them an opportunity to see that they're in danger and take off. Or you just accept one of the paradigms of our hobby is that characters die. It doesn't always have to be because of poor planning or bad roles or anything like that. It could just be crap happens and you're dead and you have to get over it and make a new character. So it all depends on where you want to be at your table. So,
Here's my thing. So, but it's not, we say crap happens, but if you make a table, so the players here who like that style, mm-hmm. and I'm one of them, I like a dangerous world. If I make a table, I always put one encounter that I think the players better run from this. That's what I think. They better run from this encounter. So like when you guys were first level and you ran through Tygon's Falls, one of the encounters, spoiler sort of, is an ogre and his mate. You guys got that one. And that was pretty terrifying. You guys had some great shots and you killed the mate. Then the male ogre showed up later and you guys were like, oh, or he was going to, but you guys left. You're like, we're not waiting around for him. And do you make it, is it truly random though? You don't go.
I think that it all depends, right?
Okay.
So if that's what the folks at the table desire, completely random, then fine, go for it. It's going to be wonky, but it may be fun for them. Mm-hmm. You can also use it as a springboard. The randomness as a springboard to get mm-hmm. you into something.
Sure.
And then have some element of randomness out there, but it doesn't have to be all totally random.
Right.
Like, so, hey, in this hex, you find a town. Let's randomly roll how many residents it has. It has three.
Yeah.
That's not fun. There's three people here. Although it could be, because you could say it has three people because, I've got an idea. There's three people now, and it's a burned down village, and there's an orc tribe that came through here and took everyone, and now you've got something to do.
Sure.
But I don't know how random do you want it to be?
Well, my point is, so when you build, so for me, when I build an adventure, when I create an adventure, it's not a random set of tables. I'm sorry, guys. I don't have interest in everything being utterly random. I don't.
Right, right.
It doesn't mean it's got to be a railroad, even though that can be fun, but it does mean I want to have an idea of what I'm throwing in front of the players, even if they tell me to screw off and go do something else. Right. Then I'll wing it. Then I'll wing it if I have to. But I'm not planning on winging it. I want to have, like in Tygon's Falls, I had a certain number of encounters. I had certain foes that I thought would be appropriate for second, third level characters. And I thought they would be hard. I wanted you to have to do the old school planning. I didn't want you like, we're going to go bulldoze all these creatures. No, you're not. You're not bulldozing all those creatures. You're going to have to be creative. And that was bared out at Big Geek Con. It was bared out when you guys played it. And I think I was successful, so I was happy with that. But when you're writing a game, how do you help a young DM know how to set those challenges? Now, I think CR from third edition was a great idea. It didn't exactly work out well, and they added too much, like, you need to make this plus or minus within the average party APL level of the party. And I was like, why do we got, so I can't make something if it's a plus five or higher, you can't do it. Yes, I can. I can do it. They just need to know when to run.
Well, okay. Here's another thing. So you have an encounter. You've built an encounter. You know how tough all the people or all the monsters are, the different things, what they can do, and what the purpose of the encounter is. Is it just some encounter that they go through in between A and B, getting from A to B? Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw in an encounter or two to give them some extra encounters, to give them extra experience. Because there's usually one or two or three key encounters, and then the rest you fill in where it's logical and gives some experience to the characters.
I think some guys are supporting you and
treasure.
Yeah, and supporting you and supporting me. Or at least I'm agreeing. Believe it or not, I'm agreeing with L. L says, Randy, random is for when it doesn't matter, like night raids. I think you call them wandering monsters. That is an approach.
Yeah.
I like Dice Tail's comment too. He says, random tables should relate to the setting. Yes. So if you're in a tundra area, I don't want to see red dragons all over your table. A snowy tundra. That way they can provide interesting plot twist and be relevant. Agreed. And this is not a bad comment. I kind of agree with L here. A GM failed if he did not design the random table himself. I agree in the sense that he failed if he didn't design it himself and it ends up with something stupid, like that time I played at the Red Dragon game store. Yeah. It's, you know, oh my God, I can't believe it's an aboleth. Then don't use it because it's stupid and we're in a dungeon and there's no water. But he used it. Darth mentioned he designs his, you know, he custom designs. I try to build my encounters combat and social custom for the group. Some are meant to be avoided. I leave it up to the group to decide how to handle them. The party doesn't always make the best choice. Right on.
Right. And sometimes, what I was getting ready to get at is you have an idea of how powerful that encounter is, but then what happens at the table surprises you. The bad guy loses initiative. The party gets initiative. They roll in a bunch of 20s and it's over in one round. And you're like, this was supposed to last at least three or four, but it, you know, surprise. What do you do about that? Do you rethink how you do encounters because of a bunch of weird rolls
No.
Or maybe it's even just that the party plans really well, and because of the strategy they use, it takes an encounter that's supposed to be really, really challenging, and then they manage it very well because of their tactics and everything. So do you totally rethink how you do encounters so that you can then balls to the wall challenge them when they do that? So you go from, say it's a fifth level party and they're really a well-oiled machine, and you send them against a bunch of, say, four or five levels higher.
Yeah.
Well, especially with, say, third edition or Pathfinder. But then they handle it really well. So do you throw in a few more levels the next time? Because they're really good at that,
you have to be careful.
Yeah, because it might have been one or two more above that, it could just flip it the other way without.
And the situation could have been some sweet rolls. I faced that a lot early on in the old days, because you guys would a lot of times would mow through my encounters, because you guys got, you know, after we've been playing about 3 or 4 years, you guys were like an elite, I must say elite, but you seemed very tactical to me. You were very sound. You thought outside of the box. You use magic items, interestingly enough, you know, in really cool ways. But I never was like, oh my God, I can't beat these guys. I was like, you know, I'm going to push it, but I want to be careful. I don't just want to murder everybody all the time. But I've always had that one encounter, one situation. Look, if they decide to step off and throw the gauntlet down against the mummy, it's not my fault they're second level. They chose it. Prepare for mummy rot. Everyone dies. Our man made a good comment. He said, lately I create a couple dozen encounters ready to go, roll randomly to have one appear. Yeah, that's kind of fun. I've done that before.
Yeah, that keeps you from worrying about making an encounter and then being sad that you never use it. You just especially if you like, oh, I really like this setup, and you have it on a note card and everything, and you throw all your note cards together and you roll them random and you pull one out, or you just shuffle them or whatever. However, yeah,
that's kind of fun. David Gwill said he didn't like, I think this is a bigger thing. He said, I didn't like how in 3E Monster AC was supposed to be linked to CR. Yeah. They had a lot. There was a lot of problems with the CR system. I'm saying conceptually, when I first saw it, I thought, wow, what a workload. I'm going to just be able to walk right into this new version of D&D and have all my encounters be as tough as I need them to be. No more, no less.
Yeah. You know, as a concept, having ostensibly a way to just dial in an encounter and it working fine. It never really worked, especially once, I mean, low level, maybe. But here's the other thing. Someone commented in here, you make your encounters that are relevant to your setting. You don't make them geared to the party.
Talk about this one? Encounters and random monsters.
I agree with that.
Very good dice.
And the thing is there's a lot of things that the DMs do, situations that they throw the PCs into, or that the PCs throw themselves into, you know, head first because they're a little dumb. And then you have to figure out how to get yourself out of it. And you just let the players figure a way out. You don't necessarily have to plan the way out or worry about balanced encounters or whether this is challenging or not. Or you say, hey, I like this encounter. I think it's going to be challenging. And then don't worry about it. You just build your encounter and you let the party of adventurers, the players deal with it. And
to a degree, I mean, yeah, you can do that. I think you have to be, I guess the DM, I guess I'm trying to think as a, again, and I'm not a designer, but one day I hope to have a role-playing game like half the people on the podcast, or maybe they do. There are many of them are ahead of me, but I'd like to be able to write a game when I do. I'd like to be able to rookie DM to have a feel for what might be appropriate. So I don't want him to just go, ooh, I think Medusas are awesome. And I think they got tons of hit points. They got the sweet gaze ability. This will be fun. Their first level, you can do that. But every time they make a save, they're failing.
Correct.
You need to accept that. And if you're okay with that, okay, that's good.
Especially if you turn the corner and there's the Medusa.
Yeah, true.
In a sense, there's something what was I going to add? Something along these lines. How far up in, let's say in most versions of D&D, how far up can the PCs punch? So a particular level, I think it varies depending on what level the characters are. There's probably a bigger window.
Sure.
But how far up and how creative do you let them get? So you've got players who will want to use modern day knowledge and say, oh, we're in an underground mine. There's probably some deposits of these various elements that we're going to make a nuclear bomb or, you know, something.
Right. Sure.
Because this stuff, you know, we can throw this stuff together and turn everything on its head because of our modern scientific knowledge. Mm-hmm. So we all know that that's a bad idea, right? We don't do that.
Yeah.
But how clever do you let them get? Do you let them say, hey, we've got this bag of holding and this other dimensional device, and we're going to trick the bad guy into putting them together and blowing himself up somehow? Would you let them get away with that? Or would you let them just do something? Well, this is something I used to do.
Yeah.
I would put explosive runes on a piece of paper and throw it into the room and see if you would have some dumb orc pick it up. Is all they have to do is look at it and it blows up.
I would say I would say awesome, and it would work.
Explosive runes isn't in the game anymore.
Oh, real, what do you say, like in fifth edition?
I don't think I've seen it in a long time. That was a first and second edition spell. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was really supposed to be used to trap your spell book or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can write it on anything. And so write it on a piece of paper or whatever, throw it in there, and hopefully an orc, because they're stupid, will pick it up and say, and then it blows everybody up, or enough of them.
I would absolutely let them. I'll let them have a chance most of the time. I do get put off sometimes, like in the kids game. Like last week, I talked about the kids game. I had a young man use ChatGPT to word his wish. That wouldn't fly with you guys.
No. I would never do that.
I would not. I mean, I would just say no. Come on, get over it. Play the game.
If we had a bunch of random crap in our various collections of things, mm-hmm. as far as the players, and we found out that we had a volatile combination of stuff, all we had to do is get the bad guy, get it in front of the bad guy.
Yeah. Bruce wants to squeeze in. He said, that biggest geek is, if you really want to hear your party cry, use template-enhanced encounters. Over 100 sample monsters from the advanced bestiary. Order yours today. Right on. I'm glad you told us that, Bruce. I would have never thought of that one. Darth answers your question. He says, if a player wants to bring something from the real world, I would ask the player to explain it to me, how to make it, and it works. If the player doesn't know how, then hell no, you can't do it. I wouldn't let them, even if they showed me, because I got some pretty smart players. They could probably do it. We got a buddy named Dave who could probably tell you how to build a bomb chemical.
No. He's saying how the character would know how to do it.
Oh, okay.
Right. Alchemy wouldn't cut it. Mm-mm. Right.
I mean... You gotta cut.
This is the one thing that completely destroys my explosive runes example.
Yeah. Yes.
Because who prepares explosive runes? It's a very and I stopped doing it because one, you wouldn't have anybody read the
piece of paper. Even though I should have.
And two, having a spell when you have a spell prep for a very niche use like that. You end up never using the spell. I can't tell you how many times as an old school wizard player where half my spells were like, I'll do this with this spell. And it never happens because the situation never happens. Or it's so niche that you forget by the time you get to it.
Killraven, a little while back, I want to post this. I want to show his comment. It's kind of long. He said, no version of the D&D CR system has ever really worked as intended. I agree. Most of the time, it's not even great as a guideline. It's moderate. At lower levels, it's okay. Without the DM being very familiar with the PC stats. Right. Mm-hmm. PC stats. Now, here's what I want to riff off of. Killraven and I mostly agree. He said, does it come down to writing challenges? Does it come down to the DM being familiar with his players and their characters and being experienced? Because I've found through all the editions of the D&D, I have the D&D. It's like the Google. Of all editions of D&D, I have done best when I trust my natural instincts as a DM and just go with what I think will work. And most of the time I'm right. Like 99.9% of the time.
How you're as a DM, your experience as a DM and how well you know the players, probably even more than the characters. So that is where you find the challenge, how you can figure out how much to challenge and how little to challenge. You have to have some experience. Newbie DMs, they're just going to use what's in the book, and then they're going to have to discover along the way.
So there's no way to advise them then.
Well, you can advise them, but they're still going to have practical experience. And the people they're going to be running aren't the people that you're running. So there's going to be some difference in what DMs are going to be able to throw at their table with the players that they have and the players' knowledge of the game and the particular characters they have. It's going to change. And it might even change from session to session a little bit, depending on different factors. So you can advise.
I'm sorry, Bruce said something.
But I think your best advice is to get to know the game and play a lot so you can have some experience under your belt.
I mean, I could always categorize certain monsters at low levels. You don't want to be throwing ancient dragons at second and third level parties. I mean, you're begging for death. Charlotte Williams is visiting again, and I really like having her on the show, but she needs to stop encouraging Bruce. She says she remembers the advanced bestiary. Good stuff for D20 LGL games. He doesn't need the encouragement. Mm. Actually, he does. I love those comments, Bruce. Keep them coming, dude.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's...
So Bruce says, this isn't fair. We're losing our resources at an economical rate versus our retail cost of healing after our three healers in our party are fully expended. Right. It isn't fair. That's not a word... That's not a phrase any of us should really say most of the time, because one of the things that the game can exploit is the real life concept that life isn't fair.
Well,
all kinds of things happen that you don't have control of. You don't know what's around the corner.
Nope.
The DM can put things there. So if your first level characters, you turn the corner and Tiamat's there and you get five breath weapons in your face. Yeah, you can't control that. You could say it's not fair, but that's not the right phrase.
Joe's jumping
it is,
you got
is
it, dude.
Randy is a dickhead. So fair, not fair. No.
That's not the point.
You just have a jerk as a DM that does stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree with Iron Man. We should just try to instill an awareness for the players to understand that running away from a tough encounter is okay, and it won't ruin the game. I agree.
Right.
You brought up a good point, though, the idea of fairness, because I have been called by some of my Cabin Con guys as a killer DM, and not so bad that they won't play, but I have gotten that. When a DM writes an adventure, or he just says he's running the game, when do you go from, is there a way to gauge easy, appropriate, tough, to unfair, to impossible? And I think Joe's kind of already answered that. He's telling me, Randy, do whatever you want. Fairness is irrelevant.
Yeah.
All right, dude. That's what I wanted to hear.
What you're going
to
do. Here's the other issue, though. What is going to be the reward for these challenges?
Yes.
So if you're going to
be the killer DM,
and throw all this crap at your players, you need to give some good rewards. And
dude,
experience definitely being the number one.
Yeah, how about that? So enough's enough. So you do let's say your third level, and you guys beat a hill giant with six orcs. You beat him, and you strategize. Which, by the way, in old school D&D, that would be a feat,
right?
Because he would come close to killing a character every swipe,
right?
So let's say you beat him, right? Right, Killraven. I know Killraven is my spirit animal. He says, I've been called a rat, bastard, killer DM, but they keep coming back, so I was doing something right. That's what I'm talking about. But my point is, so you do that, and you get lucky, and I'm like, that was my encounter I thought you guys would run from. So I'm like, kudos. I give you all the experience points. Is that enough, or does there need to be gold and treasure?
Well, there should. I'm saying that's the primary
dreaded,
thing.
The dreaded M word, magic items.
Giants don't typically have them. I mean, hill giants, they'll have a bag full of who knows what. A bunch of heads of creatures it's killed. He'll have a lot of food and a few rocks to throw. If he has a magic item, it's an accident.
Yeah. Why is he not? Well, he's probably not smart enough to use it.
Or maybe even money. The thing is, it depends on how you use hill giants. If they're the traditional, fairly stupid, but extremely tough kind of creatures, they might have, if you can figure out where its lair is at, there might be something there. But walking around, probably not. The orcs might have more gold than the hill giant will.
See, Charlotte's picking up what I'm putting down. She said, killer DM, like it's my fault. They thought they could just shank a beholder and get away with it. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Beholders are tough.
They are tough.
So you better watch if you could figure out some kind of way to constantly damage that hill giant and make it chase you around, and you can run away from it.
And your archers
can figure out some way of, and then it doesn't run away after it's down below half hit points or whatever. Then fine. If the DM doesn't take him away and you somehow whittle it down with your D6 D8 weapons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck.
So I guess basically the DM should only care. I say you create your region, town, dungeon, setting, whatever, and let the chips fall, right?
Say that again.
Is that what you do? So I think I agree with you. I think you create your region and your town or your dungeon or however much you're going to do and let the chips fall. If you're going to use a random table, that's fine.
Right. Yes. Okay. Ravens collect shiny things. Yeah, it could be a bottle cap.
Yes, but it could be a +5 sword.
Like I said, they could have something, but it's probably an accident.
Well, Iron Man made the point. He said a while back, hill giants might have discarded the magic items from the victims 3 weeks ago. Magic sword is laying on the cave floor. I would imagine if the sword looked super cool, maybe that hill giant would pick it up and use it. But I guess it wouldn't look as great as a big tree.
Yeah, stump. Yeah. So, and then it just depends on, like I said, how you use your hill giants. Maybe in your world, hill giants are essentially big orcs, and they're not any less intelligent than anybody else.
Yeah.
So you could even have hill giants wearing armor and using a big two-handed sword. Scary.
Yes.
But you could. It's traditionally hill giants are big, dumb, club-wielding brutes.
Yeah. And against the giants, you know, not particularly that module, but you could use it. I mean, hill giants could be trained by a more powerful entity. Maybe there's a smart drow fighter that's training them and says, you will use swords because they're better, and I'm going to teach you how to use them properly. You're so strong. Look how you cut your enemy in half with that. Do that. So you could run into that every once in a while. But I would like the monsters to act the way I originally designed them to most of the time. Yeah.
Bruce says, tune into my next game to hear my players complain editing, about fire giant rogues using precision damage during their flanking maneuvers.
Fire giant rogues.
Yes, because fire giants already don't do enough damage.
Yeah.
But if you don't want the fire giant rogues to get precision damage on you, you got to keep moving them. You got to keep moving around so they don't get into position.
Don't let them flank you, fool. I don't want to tell you.
Yeah.
Fire giant rogues are nasty.
Fire giants can get you in flanking. You have flunked flank.
Flank, right on. How hard should a DM work to make mostly appropriate encounters? If you're going to play for the night, other people are fine with super random stuff. But if you imagine, especially in older school D&D, it was pretty easy to have multiple encounters in a night. If you're out in the wilderness adventuring, doing something cool, you know, exploring the old wizard's tomb, I feel like as a DM, you ought to make the challenge. If they're going where you had intended them to go, shouldn't the majority of the encounters be manageable, or does that just silly? Just let it be what it is, and whatever happens, happens.
This is going to be according to the tastes of the DM and the players.
Okay.
Right. So I don't think there's a universal answer for that. Sure. For me, if all the encounters out in the wilderness are about our level all the time, I'll be okay with it. I'll just say, well, that's how Randy's rolling.
Sure.
But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
That
all of the encounters are appropriate for our level.
Okay.
Whether we're second level or 10th level or 100th level.
Sure.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Right.
Because just because we arrive in the forest, all the monsters either level up or level down, or we just happen to be the right level. And I understand that the DM has to have things for you to do. Mm-hmm. And you don't want every encounter to be a death trap or easy peasy either.
And especially GMs that aren't very creative. If you do too much random stuff, everything will just be a fight.
Right. The answer for DMs that or GMs that don't want to put the work in.
Sure.
To either get a good feel for challenges or maybe they don't have time or whatever. They still want a DM or GM, get a module. And I know that a lot of people are like, oh, modules, whatever. Then you've got everything there for you. You run a few modules, then that's another thing that can show you perhaps what is challenging and what's not.
Yep. I think modules can do it. Yep.
Yeah. So you can run a few modules and get a feel for things and then do your own thing.
Yeah.
There's uses for them.
Sure.
So I guess to answer your question, I don't think that there's a universal answer for that.
No, probably not. I think it's a lot on taste, but like you said, there can be overkill. If I design every encounter to be a perfect challenge so that your characters are, you know, using exactly a quarter or one eighth of your resources, and you're like, that's kind of weird, Randy. But there could be a situation where that kind of happens. meaning you may run through a warren of ghouls, and you're fighting between three and six of them every time you run into them.
Yeah, so they're going to be samey.
Until you hit the nest. But, right. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the module, Charlotte. That was our comment. Modules are fantastic. I didn't even run my own module at Big Geek Con as written.
Yeah, there's people changes. Who will say a DM who uses modules has failed. There are people who will say that a module is railroading and stuff like that. And,
whatever.
We can ignore all of this.
Those
because,
people are wrong.
Yeah. Modules have been part of our hobby almost since the outset.
Almost.
Certainly since AD&D.
Since AD&D, it was a thing. I know, yeah. Gygax was like, initially, he was like, he couldn't believe DMs would want that because he thought everybody was going to, DIY everything. But, it
well,
does
his
show
intentions. Yeah, but his intention with them isn't what we have to use them for.
Correct.
So his intention was a bit of standardization and keeping people in the D&D fold and stuff like that. But what you can use a module for is to save yourself some time while you're learning the game.
Yeah.
On how to build encounters, and how to do pacing and other things, and to get your creative juices flowing. If you've never played the game before, any kind of role-playing game, and you just expect to be able to learn how to play from the Dungeon Master's Guide, got some surprises for you. That's not really going to happen. I mean,
no.
People have done it, and they've kind of stumbled along the way and eventually gotten good or not or whatever, but modules are a good way to get you from A to B.
Yeah. Oh, Charlotte mentioned something. I was this DM for a long time. She said, I remember some DMs that would go from module to module. They would just come up with transitional adventures to go from place to place.
Yeah.
I remember like back in the days in second edition, when I was well into second edition, I would take two or three adventures from Dungeon Magazine and my wife would laugh at me because I'd be running around the house. I've got to find linkage. That's what I would say. She goes, what do you mean? I've got to link these three together. It's got to make sense. And so I'd end up massage this one, change this one, and totally rewrite that one. I'm like, and I got three adventures that the characters can go on if they so choose. And too many people think when you run a module, oh, you're just going to be, railroading them through it. No, the thing that I find funny, when you throw a hook out there that sounds interesting, most players want to bite on it because they're there that night to do something.
Now, there are a lot of older modules also that have a lot of extra material that you can use in case they may not have written them for that reason. But if the players go off of the beaten path, there's often a lot of good things there that you can use to pad it so that you don't, it's not like you have nothing you can throw at them.
And Patrick Demo says, and I agree, I even like running modules straight. Nothing wrong with them. Anyone who claims that a DM has failed for using modules just being arrogant. Agreed.
What was that again? Say that again.
Patrick Demo says, anyone who claims a DM has failed for using a module straight is just being arrogant.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I used to do stuff when we were really young. I'd say, hey, guys, I want to run Temple of Elemental Evil. How many times do we play that? And my players even asked me, hey, could we run through Temple of Elemental Evil?
Yeah, we love that module.
Yeah, and it wasn't. And what was funny is you guys didn't really, you would remember some things, like maybe
where you
got killed.
Oh, and then we'd say, oh, I forgot about that completely.
Yeah. And they're like, we didn't even get to this part last time. Why are we fighting these fire priests? I don't remember them. I'm like, you never
went. I know we've had TPKs because we forgot something.
Yeah. You're like, oh, we should have remembered that trap. Oh, my God.
It's not like we all had the copy of it and memorized it and said, yeah, we're going to do all this crap.
Right. So, and it was fun. Now these days, I'm not inclined to say, hey, let's run Tygon Falls unless I'm wanting to play test something. It says, our man says, these days, I'm in a game that is run episodic. Sure. The characters are the same, but episodes are not necessarily connected or are just connected loosely. Each episode is about taking about four sessions to complete. Nothing wrong. I think Deadlands runs great like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to run a real tight Deadlands campaign. I would like an episodic one. I think it runs well that way.
Yeah, and if you have limited time, like you're not running 8-hour games like Bruce does.
Bruce, yeah.
If you're running 4 hours every couple of weeks, episodic's probably best for you.
Yeah, they'll hear soon. I will talk to you after the show. We gotta get on to 8-10-hour games 7 times a week. So we'll get to that.
Seven.
Okay, 8 times a week.
Okay.
8x8 thing. Patrick says, as much as we like to crap on Paizo, deservedly, their adventure path system is wonderful, and by extension, so are Savage World's plot points. I like Savage World's plot points better. And oh, look who showed up. What is up, Bear? How you doing? The Gen X GM. He's a good cat. I like your channel, man. I've been listening
to you for a while.
Welcome to, we're talking about when is enough enough. So enough worrying about encounter design and challenge level, or do you got more you want to add?
Let's see.
Did I hit everything, or did I miss something that you wanted to chat about? We talked about level appropriateness.
How about when we players just completely bypass an encounter? You've so carefully crafted
it, and you're like,
you feel it so integral to this adventure, and we're like, yeah, we're going to skip that because there's what over there? Yeah, we're going around.
See, my world is a quantum world, and so if you skip the quantum ogre, no, I don't do that. I deep inside, I'm like, dang it. But there's also the possibility, and Joe's, we've mentioned this before, especially now that I'm older, I'm like, if they skip something that I thought was cool or integral, that means they are not going to know something when something else happens.
Either know something, maybe there's treasure in that encounter that, well, no. There won't be treasure there that you need because this is Randy we're talking.
There'll be like 100 gold.
Yeah. No, but there'll be something like a note or some other thing that's worthless. It's just informational.
Right. You can't sell it.
But a lot of times for me, if there is some overriding goal, like saving the princess, if I can skip a lot of things to get to the princess, figure out where the princess is at, go get her, and then skip a bunch of crap in between crap, I would do that.
I used to hate that, but I like it now because I'm like, because the players are excited. I mean, Joe really, he's like, dude, you meant for us to fight that, didn't you? I'm like, yeah, I thought you totally would. He's like, yeah. It's like we bypassed this thing that could have just drained the crap out of us. And that's a very old school mentality, which I think is good. I mean, why are you wasting all this energy fighting the ogre when you know you have to get to the Rakshasa who he's guarding? If you can get around him, get to the Rakshasa, get it done.
Right. There's ways to bypass, or maybe you figure out some way to make that ogre chase you down a hallway into a room, and then you've tricked them in and lock them in and stuff like that. You don't have to fight them. There's not always ways to do that. There's often not ways to do that.
Right.
But anytime that there is a way to do that, and I catch on to it, then I'm going to do that.
Sorry, I was just saying hi to Patty's Parlor. He jumped in.
Hey, Patty.
I wasn't keeping track of things over at Rumble. I tell you, I'm just I'm weak sauce when it comes to that, man. So I don't know.
Oh, went to Kickstarter. Weak sauce to what?
Weak sauce to always check and Rumble. Patty usually hops on there, and I don't do it. Yes, you're correct, L. Joe, our favorite part of being bring back the princess was we were never told dead or alive. Yeah, there was no details. Though Joe would be inclined to bring her back alive. He's a goody two shoes. So
tiny bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I hate this as I think about designing my own game. Then if I can't give the DM, and maybe the best advice is play, buy Randy's module, run it, buy his next module and run it. And then you'll start to see what's really hard, and don't do that to your players.
Right. Yeah. Hey. So along with this, so you read novels, you watch shows, and this thing happens.
Right.
And the main characters are supposed to stop the thing. Yet, when the characters get in front of the thing they're supposed to stop, they stand there and gawk. Or they let the priest or whatever, whoever's running the thing that they're supposed to stop, do his thing for like a whole minute. So don't do that.
Right.
Right. So to me, that's the same thing as letting the DM read the box text. Yes, you have entered the room. And when you enter the room, you see this this gold circle inlaid into the floor, and at
16 feet to the right, 16 feet to the right is a sensor. On that is a bowl, blood dripping from it, and over here is this and that. Yeah, you guys, man, you guys.
Then the priest comes in and stabs the girl in the chest because that's how they end the ritual. And you're like, hey, I wanted to run over there and get the princess. Well, you were too busy looking at everything. Well, I wouldn't have looked at everything. There's a princess right over. I go get her. Right. So, but this doesn't really relate exactly to challenge, except that sometimes players can surprise the DM and short circuit the whole challenge thing.
Yes. And as a DM, sometimes you just got to expect, like you said, player death is a thing. So, I mean, who knows? They're still talking about the princess. They're all commenting. Here's a good one by Charlotte Williams. That'd be a weird fantasy movie, wouldn't it? The heroes return with the shoebox with the princess's hands or something in it and just say, we tried.
We tried.
Yeah.
Oh. Or just say, we listened to the monologue.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a thing, right? That's another enough is enough. When does, you know, you put all this effort into the players just bypassing everything? You can get your panties in a wad. I try not to, but
right, because there's a lot of folks out there who run the game as a way to tell a story, which is fine, I guess, but then they get their panties in a bunch when the story doesn't get told the way they want it to, because we as players often do screwy things.
Yeah,
we don't just stay on the beaten path all the time. No. Or bad rolls, good rolls. Larry's out.
Yep. Mage's Musing popped in. The Legend of the Shoebox Princess. Right. Oh. Yeah, Bear and Mage's Musing both had popped in. I've been watching their is it Friday night you guys do? I don't know what night it is. I've been catching it after it's your stream, after it's gone on. They put on a good one, Joe. If you get a chance to hear Bear and Mage and a few of the other guys chatting away, they got some good conversations.
Patty Sparrow says she probably wore Crocs. Well, that's probably a good reason to not save the princess right there.
Oh, all right. So you ready to tell them to do some things? Because we've gone way into this. Maybe we should tell them to do some stuff, Joe.
Yeah. Subscribe. Subscribe. Hit the like button, the bell notification. Throw in some comments, just to say hi. It all helps the algorithms. If you're listening to this after the fact or watching it after the fact, please do all that stuff on your YouTube or in Rumble or over at Twitch. There's not a whole lot you can do at Twitch. The video only stays live, I think, for a week or something like that, maybe a month.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. But definitely hit the like button, follow, comment, share, do all that stuff.
Mage, you came in about halfway, brother, so you're good. I want to get the plug in for Bear and Mages, and there's some other guys there too. Wednesday night they do the Four Color Cafe. Check that out if you want to hear some good conversation.
Four Color as in comics?
I think Bear's a comic guy. I think he likes superhero RPGs. I think that's one of his shticks. He really loves those, and he's working on a game. Help me out, Bear. Is it Bastard Sword? Is that what it's called? I know it's something with the Bastard Sword. It's definitely intriguing. I want to eventually check that out when it's all done. So, all right. So, another thing kind of connected to this, because yes, thank you. Yeah. Bastard Sword is his RPG he's working on. Yeah. He writes comics and things. So yeah, he's a interesting cat. I think we were on Legion of Myths rando RPG stream together one time. That's where I first met him. So it's good.
Hey, before we get going, Ice Pirate sucked so bad. Are you kidding?
What?
That was hilarious.
I remember that being awesome.
I mean, there was a lot of movies in that time period where you thought that they were going off script and doing a bunch of ad-lib crap. And sometimes that, I believe in Ice Pirates, that happened there. A lot of Mel Brooks movies, it seemed like he did that too. But a lot of those folks were stage comedians and improv guys, so maybe that's why it seemed like that. But
in our hometown, Joe, We went to go to Grant Plaza. This is in Indiana. I think it was one of the last, it was the last year it was open as a theater. We watched that as a we had our D&D group. We all went one night, either after D&D or before, and we watched it. Didn't know what it would be about. We loved the crap out of that movie. So now people are yelling about space herpes. Okay. All right. So the last segment here, a little bit of weirdness connected to, connected to this enough is enough thing. I feel like it kind of is. One of the things that I always found that was weird, Joe, in the specific example, the broad example is inter-party strife.
Mm-hmm.
I get, oh, it makes for good this and good that when the thief and the wizard doesn't get along and the fighter and the powder at odds as to what they should do.
That's people who are thespians.
I know. And, you know, I can kind of roll like that sometimes. But the worst, I just don't get it, especially in such a dangerous situation. I mean, you guys, like you were in the military, Joe, though I don't think, were you ever deployed at a time of war? You never were.
I was never deployed. To an active zone. I was in Germany during both Desert Storm, Desert Shield and Desert Storm.
Oh, Bruce and Janet went on a deep dive on that last night. They'll link it in Discord. Okay, cool. We'll check it out, bro. But my point was, I wonder a group like that, why? Because the world is so dangerous. Can you really afford people that are at odds with each other? I mean, I used to say, especially in our heyday of third edition, I would say, look, guys, I've got plenty of challenges for you. You don't need to add on to it by bickering, because trust me, I will not be opposed to catching you with your pants down if you guys are arguing about something stupid, and I'll have this little sneaky invisible stalker show up and make your life, you know, well, some make somebody dead.
Right.
You know, if you want to roll like that.
We went through a whole phase, a backstabbing phase where we're all, so stupid.
You called it our WWE era.
We were 13, 14.
I think you called it our WWE era.
Yeah.
Backstab, take stuff. And the whole, even the concept of the thief stealing, I get it. He's a thief, but that annoys the crap out of me. I even find it weird. How could a party, I mean, okay, so you could argue, well, if I steal a few coins, or but that's a novel. Shauner said, look at the dwarf and elf and LOTR started as hate, then became buddy comedy fighting. Yeah, but that's a novel movie.
But that's fine. It's fine if you have a kind of thing at the start, but then you come together at some point. Or hopefully very soon, because even in the movie, all it took was them losing the ring halfway through the first movie, right?
Right.
And they weren't together all that long.
Right.
And then when they went searching, you could say that once they went searching for the hobbits, Merry and Pippin, when they went searching for that, they kind of those three Gimli, Legolas, they kind of bonded over that period of time there. And in what's the name of the not the where they fought at Mordor, but in the second movie where they had the orcs and the
Helm's Deep.
So when they fought at Helm's Deep, they were doing the whole dwarf tossing thing, and they're at by the time they got to Helm's Deep, they were doing the competitive orc slaying. But they really bonded over the time they were searching for Merry and Pippin. And that started at the very beginning of their travel.
Well, even before they started searching for Merry and Pippin, before they got to the shores in the movie, they're in the same boat together. And Gimli is waxing, you know, poetically about Galadriel's three hairs or stuff, and they were buddies.
She was the exception.
The Iron Man made a good point, and I'm at this point now. I don't GM PvP, so don't do it. Yeah, that's right, how I feel right now. I just don't know. I can't even imagine how a group of characters If a guy goes in and steals a few silver every now and again, okay. But let's say you go in and the thief finds a ring plus two, protective ring protection, and he steals it. I'm sorry. If my party finds that out, maybe he needed it, and maybe he would get it anyway. But, dude, you're stealing an item that is all but invaluable, right? It's a very important magic item.
Oh, sure.
How can we trust him that when we go after the holy widget of death to try to save the kingdom, that he won't just steal it and give it to the lich? Or keep it for himself so he can be the next. I mean, I'm not interested in telling that kind of story. And honestly, it breeds resentment, even with adults at the table. I mean, we were young. We did it. We you know, gitsy backsies. You know, if I killed Joe's character, he'll kill mine with his next one as soon as he got a shot.
Yeah, so it was immature, yeah. Juvenile.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, that whole subgroup is probably a subgroup in our gaming niche is a bit juvenile.
Right.
I mean, like what you said, the environment is bad enough. The DM is going or GM is going to throw enough challenge your way that you're not going to have time. It's going to be a big distraction from whatever is really going on. Inner party strife, whether or not, I mean, we were doing like conferences, like,
yeah, these two against these two.
And they would take the DM in the room and say, this is what we're going to do. And all these plans. And it would be so distracting. Hey, we're trying to get to the caves of chaos. Can you guys just,
no, I got me and the paladin have had enough of that wizard and thief. Mage's Museum makes a good comment. He says, you can't trust someone who thieves from the group. That's the point. If they're caught, you boot them. Character, not player. That's a consequence. At the very least. I think if it becomes a thing, I don't even want a player who does that very often. Though Martinson makes a comment. He says, we ran Necessary Evil years ago, and we had a player take the widget that they needed to get, and one of the other players said, you need to hand it over now. That other player happened to be a super ninja, and he cut the dude's head off. To the guy's credit, he didn't get mad. He was like, yeah, that's what my guy would do. I was cool with dying. He made another one. He was never a bit of a trouble ever again. So, I mean, it can work, but it's not something I like to do. Yeah. Let's see. What else? What about things like... I can't read my own notes. I'm sorry. Friendly fire. Remember that in third edition? It's not that I'd never heard of it, but I played with some guys where they said that's something they just accept. They would have thieves be, you know, that had the evasion ability. So they would be out there fighting the orcs and they'd be like, center the fireball on me. I have supreme evasion. Don't worry about it.
Right.
It just seems, that just seems so weird to do that. Why are you going to, you know, you got a party of six characters. Losing one is significant. Why would you just take a chance like that?
I mean, that became a thing because, one, the thief did get it, and it often was the save was good enough that they could rely on it.
Right. And, I mean, I'm okay tactically. It's sound in the mechanics side of the game. But from the viewpoint of a player in a world, a character in a world, and I'm not talking namby-pamby narrative, I'm just saying from a character in a world, I don't want you fireballing me when I'm in there fighting the orcs. I don't need extra damage. And I get that I could do it, but...
If it was always improved evasion,
yep,
where you were guaranteed if you made your save, you took no damage, then that would be one thing. But when it early on, you would always take some damage. It went a fireball if you made your save. Well, I guess the improved version was... If you make your, I can't really remember the distinction, but I know improved evasion was better, and that was the one you really wanted, and was great when the area effect attacks came out. And something I can understand from that point of view.
Sure,
but if you're just always taking damage,
yeah,
then no.
Yeah. L makes the point. He says, not that. It's a game, so it's up to the players to decide. Sure, if they want to do the fireball on your
party. It's a gamey part of the game.
Yeah.
And all the tactics a lot of the tactics that are really based on player abilities, not necessarily real world logic, but player abilities like this, like evasion. I know I'm probably going to make it and it's probably going to work out fine. I've got a bunch of hit points. I can take the hit, but these guys are probably going to, it's going to suck for all these guys out here. Go ahead. But in the real world, you're not going to want to voluntarily stand in the middle of a fireball.
No. L asked the question, would you deny Joe letting Patrick fireball him to finish a group of orcs as the GM? No, I won't deny anybody doing that. I won't even deny. I just think it's weird. It's a weird thing. Yeah. It's a very gamey part of the game.
It's a lot of the gamey parts of the game can kind of feel weird.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it. Yeah, I'm not saying you can't. And even with Mage's Musings comments, he made a good comment about the thief stealing. He said, understand I'm totally okay with PCs coming into conflict, but all players must understand the consequences. It takes the right mindset to play it right. I can do it. I can play that. I just don't really enjoy it. And honestly, I'm not a big fan of, to be truthful, I'm not a big fan of player characters that are very mercenary. I mean, if I have a whole party of characters that are like, you got to pay me for this, and how we joked about killing the princess, sorry, we killed her, no big deal. I want player characters that are heroic. I just do. I enjoy playing the bad guys. I prefer that kind of adventure. Not that you can't do it. You know, we don't go down the road of evil characters and stuff. Play however you want.
Yeah, well, you can look at the thief being somewhat heroic. Depending on the situation, if we need to take out this group and he has to take a little damage for it to happen, that could be considered a little brave if you think about it.
Oh, sure. And like Armin makes a good point. One of his players has a ring of fire resistance. He always volunteers to go out front and fireball possible situations. Yeah, cool. Define heroics. Well, you can look it up, L, but I would say heroics is doing things out of a sense of honor, goodness, kindness, helping people out, being willing to sacrifice yourself for the right causes. Do we agree with what is heroic? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. That's just what I'm just saying. What I like. I mean, it doesn't mean the players have to be that. I've had plenty of players that are mercenary. No. I just enjoy a game less if it devolves into, let me work behind this character's back to get this done. Let me steal from the party. Let me fireball people. And we're just going to be totally tactical. We're not even going to worry about, well, the rules say I should be able to make it. Okay, cool. Do it. It's just weird, but okay. Now, if you got things to back it up, just because I don't like it doesn't mean I'm going to stop it.
Right.
I mean, nothing they're doing is against quote unquote the rules. You know, there's things that happen in the game that people like and things they don't like. That's just something I don't prefer. I would prefer if almost everybody at the table was mostly lawful good characters with a handful of neutral to neutral good characters in there. That's what I would prefer, but that's just me.
I almost always play neutral good.
Yeah, I tend to like lawful good, but neutral good's fine too. And I agree with Mage's Musing. He said, you can play your moral character in a mercenary team, play the character you like, react to the attitude of the others. That's plenty. Yeah, sure. Do however you like. Good night, Bruce. He's bugging out on us. So that's cool. But yeah, that was just that was some weird stuff. I think that people do that. I find odd. And I've tried to play characters that were more neutral and cutthroaty. I can't do it.
It gets, for me, it gets old.
Yeah,
sometimes you play someone that doesn't really care, and just to do something different, perhaps. Yes, but almost all the time, I just play the hero guy.
Yeah, and you know, that's to each their own.
That's me.
Some want to be the shady guy, do this, do that. Yeah.
What's this?
That is.
Seems like okay, Randy. This is the crux of GM support groups, dreams, if that's what we are doing. As I have been discussing with RPG Grandma, seems a lot of GMs get so full of themselves and forget to seek response from their players. Sure. I guess.
I don't think I do that. I'm just talking about my preference.
Everybody has their preferences. And to be honest, we have a group that we've curated over a couple of decades that were similar enough that we work really well. However, at our convention, We met a bunch of folks that we hadn't played a single game with, and we still all played well together.
Absolutely. And in a convention setting, I tend to be a lot more, it bothers me less because I know that I don't know these people. They don't know me. They do what they want. Whatever happens, happens, you know?
Yeah. But it still seemed that our play styles were so similar.
Yeah.
It might just be that, like I've already said, because there are folks that listen to us.
Yes.
Here, that they're more, they may have been more inclined to play the similar enough, but it was really gratifying.
Yeah, it was. That was probably the coolest thing about it. I think that's all I had for the weirdness. I don't know about you.
No, this is good. Interparty strife. You know what is enough? None.
For me, that's what I prefer.
The only interparty strife that could be interesting is if the DM is trying the DM through an NPC, the bad guy throws in a monkey wrench into the party to try to get them at each other. It's kind of hard to do, I guess, especially if we're like, yeah, you didn't do that. That's the bad guy lying or whatever.
I was enamored for a while of the plant. Remember, we had a lot of one shots with a plant that would be someone playing a player character who from the get go was against the party, setting them up for something. That's fine if you do it once, but you do it too many times. It's like
you used to like running doppelgangers.
Oh, I did. I love the doppelganger. That's true.
Right. Yeah. So with the doppelganger, taking over a player is tricky. Taking over a PC is tricky because you can have them play the doppelganger. You can just have them play as normal, and then when the doppelganger wants to flip the switch, then you just say, okay, you're actually dead.
Right.
Five rooms back, the doppelganger cut your throat, and you lost your PC. Sorry.
Yeah. Kill Raven made a comment. There are some egomaniacal, narcissistic DMs out there. I'm sure there are. If I'm sounding like that, I'm not. I'm just telling you that there's things I like, but I tend to let players,
you let us do what we do.
What's the last time I ever said you can't?
Nah, you don't do that.
I don't do that. So, I mean,
if a player's character is causing strife, most of the time these days, the other players will handle it. Their characters will handle it. And then you just let what happens happens.
Yeah. Oh, Mage is musing, dude. He just gave me an idea to bring my doppelganger back. He said, last time I did the doppelganger as PC at work because the player in question was out for a few sessions. The other players thought I was NPCing them. Right on, man. That's awesome. Oh, that's so good. I love that. Oh, Bear says he's narcissistic. Right on. But he's right most of the time. So we have to, we have to give him that, it's allowed.
So,
okay. Right on, Kill Raven. I didn't think you were. I just wanted to make it clear that I'm not that dude. I wasn't offended. I mean, I believe you. I believe that's the case, that there are DMs that just do it my way all the time.
Yeah, that's not what happens.
No. I mean, I prepare games my way, but when the play, no adventure survives contact with the player character, so it doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah. All right.
PvP is for video games.
That's my general opinion. I don't want it.
That's what you like.
Yeah, if you like it, you do it. But I don't want it to come to blows between characters. Now, if one of those characters happens to actually be a doppelganger, then I'm cool with that.
Hey, neighbor of the beast.
I haven't seen him for a bit. Glad he's here. Right on, Bear. You keep doing what you're doing, brother. Don't listen to him. You're doing it the right way. Let's see here. Random Geekitude, do we have any information?
We do Emporium? Not.
No emails or nothing?
No, we do not.
All right.
Nothing new out there in Big Geek Land.
Well, you think we're about ready to bounce, dude? It's early tonight. Yeah, not even 9 o'clock. What do you want to do? Do you want to call tonight or keep jabbering about stuff and keep these good folks on the line?
Patty says, LOL, I'm still split on the story GM for better or worse. a lot of GMs want to tell a story. Most of them want to tell a story on some level or another when they're doing their own thing, when they're doing their own adventure. It's usually not with folks that generally just run the modules.
Yeah.
But a lot of GMs want to tell a story. I think for my part, play serves the story.
Right.
So the story is emergent from play if there's a story to tell. We shouldn't, as players of the game, be beholden to a story. As in, the DM shouldn't get hung up on whether or not his story is told, his individual story. I think also when you have DMs that do that, some of them introduce inserts of one sort or another.
Yeah.
So they want to tell a story and they have their players, their stars, and their stars are not the PCs.
Ah.
So what happens to their stars that they throw in is more important than what the PCs are doing. And then the adventure that the PCs are trying to get through takes a back seat to that thing that they're trying to do. Or that star of theirs. And then they bring their star on stage and then they just totally make everything that the players do irrelevant.
I think Patrick Demo mentioned this twice. He said, I mentioned earlier that I always have a story in mind. I do too. But I enjoy watching the players tell it because it's never the way that I planned it. And that's cool.
Right. But I think the way some DMs do that is with the PCs in mind as the quote unquote stars. Some other DMs have their stars that they want to be on the center stage and that the PCs are just bystanders. And you can sometimes tell when the DMs are doing that. And that's one of the things I don't like.
Yeah, we've had some of those situations. I've been on the player side with you when those have happened before, and it really gets under your skin.
Yeah.
And you just kind of want to say, okay.
Do you need us here?
Yeah.
No, I don't think you need us here. I think you got your thing you got going on there and you don't really need us.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who said this before. It was Iron Man made a comment to me. This was something he had said at Big Geek Con, and I want to explore this with him more. He said, Randy, players should bring half the game. That's an interesting comment, and I agree. I mean, they should make it easy for you to run. And then Bear later on makes a comment. It's not the player's game. It's not the GM's game. It's our game. The story is told together. GM plot to kick it off, but be reactionary to the player's choices to make it organic. Yeah. Just react to what they do. Yeah. I have not, L. He asked, maybe Joe has. Randy, Joe, L asked, did you hear about Netflix getting sued for stealing Rebel Moon? I don't even know what that is, Rebel Moon RPG.
Never heard of that.
So I'm going to say no. But
why would they steal an RPG? They don't do that kind of thing. I don't know all of their holdings. So Rebel Moon, not Revel, Rebel Moon. I've heard of Rebel Moon, and I thought that was probably what you meant. You mean as far as a...
Yeah, what's Rebel Moon? I don't know what Rebel
Moon is. Movie version of it?
Probably.
And they locked up, maybe they locked up the rights to the RPG of Rebel Moon or.
Yeah, I see the article. They're sued over canceled Rebel Moon tabletop. Over canceled Rebel Moon tabletop. I don't know what that is. Oh, Rebel Moon was some video game. Sorry. That's outside of their. They canceled. Oh, here it is. They canceled the RPG at the last minute. Armin says he's heard, this is good news, he heard Netflix is considered Horse Girl series.
Of course they are. that's on the pipe. They probably already had something that they could retool at the last minute.
Yeah. Bear and Mage's Musing are bowing out later, Bear. I already said goodbye to Mage. You guys, thanks for stopping in. I always love to have you guys here. Get that sweet comment action.
So is it that... The RPG got canceled because of copyright or copyright concerns because of something that Netflix did?
I don't know. These guys know more than me.
It rings a bell, but I don't remember all the details.
Oh, L says it's been books ready to sell December, 1,000 plus pages. Wow. And they just said, nope. That's odd.
Huh. Oh, they canceled an adaptation.
Patty's going to booger. See you, buddy.
Netflix canceled an adaptation.
Oh, okay.
That Zack Snyder was working up.
Mm.
Dicebreaker.
Mark Markham says he won't watch since they will likely ignore all the established horse girl lore and race swapper. Oh, that was the first thing we talked about earlier. All right, man. Well, I think I need to get on heck out of here. What do you think, Joe? Have we talked?
Yeah, probably so.
Because I don't know. It's 9 o'clock and Randy's tired. I got to travel soon. I'll be doing a big 2-day turnaround soon. I'm going home for a couple days, not even a couple days, 24, 26 hours, and I'll be back. So it's going to be a whirlwind. I had a cousin pass away, so that was pretty rough. But we're going to go to that funeral. So why don't we scoot on out of here, man? Is that cool?
Sure. So I just want to, I found what the whole deal was with Rebel Moon was.
Okay, hit it.
There was a Rebel Moon movie, and then they were going to have an expanded universe, kind of like Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
and they were going to expand it via the RPG.
Mm.
But then the tabletop game, not tabletop game, the movie got canceled.
Gotcha. So
whatever production that this game company put in to the RPG was all for naught.
Oh,
it's what they're suing them.
They should have just let them produce it. Who cares?
I mean, they probably weren't going to be able to get in nearly, they probably put extra resources into it because it was going to be a movie on Netflix and they could be kind of sure on what kind of reception it may get. So they probably spent a little more than would some company who just made an RPG off the cuff with no kind of backing like that.
Yeah. Killraven said we lost him on the horse girl stuff. Check it out. It's by Leyline Press, so you know it's super good RPG. Just Google it, horse girl RPG. You'll see some real idiocy. You'll love it. You'll want to buy it immediately, just like all of us. All right. If you'd like to support our show, please like, subscribe, and share us where you're listening or viewing the show. We're on all the socials, videos, and podcasts. You can give us a little cashola through PayPal, Streamlabs. We're still on Ko-Fi too, right?
And yeah.
Patreon. On the web, we always have biggestgeekestpodcast.com. Have you gotten the videos up from the video stuff for the shorts for Big Geek?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I will do that this week.
As soon as you can, brother. You can email us at biggestgeekestpodcast.com. And of course, always check out Good RPGs, Not Horse Girl, at biggeekemporium.com. I'm not sure I would want that to be on Big Geek Emporium.
What?
Emma, horse girl. I know you'd probably be okay with it, but I would hate it. So
no one's going to buy it.
Yeah, we should put it up front. Oh, and check out Horde Wars. It's totally awesome. That's a great game.
Yeah, they've got a link on our front page.
Yes, sir. All right, man. What do you think?
I think we should put a pin in this. I think we're done. Half hour early.
All right, dudes. And everybody, thank you for spending some time with us. This is Randy.
And this is Joe.
And remember, if you can't be big like us, then be geeks like us.